Barbecue. I recognized my mom in the background of some of them, and then, at the very end, is one of me with my parents. I can't be more than 4 years old. I'm eating a piece of cake with my hand, looking directly into the camera, as my mother holds me and my father has his arm around us. Most people still called me by my first name, Elizabeth, back then. Elizabeth Monique Grant. My mom assured me I'd grow up to be a Liz or a Lizzie, but my father had always loved the name Monique and couldn't help but call me by it. I would often remind him that my name was Elizabeth, and he would tell me that my name was whatever I wanted it to be. When he passed away, it became clear to both my mother and me that I should be Monique. It eased our pain ever so slightly to honor every last thing about him. So my pet name became my real name, and my mother often reminds me that my name was a gift from my father. Looking at this picture, I am struck by how beautiful my parents were together, James and Angela. I know what it cost them to build a life, to have me. A white woman and a black man in the early 80s, neither of their families being particularly thrilled with the arrangement. They moved around a lot before my father died, trying to find a neighborhood where my parents felt at ease at home. My mother didn't feel welcome in Baldwin Hills. My father didn't feel comfortable in Brentwood. I was in school before I met another person who looked like me. Her name was Yael. Her father was Dominican, and her mother was from Israel. She liked to play soccer. I liked to play dress-up. We could rarely agree on anything. But I liked that when someone asked her if she was Jewish, she said, "I'm half Jewish." No one else I knew was half something. For so long, I felt like two halves. And then my father died, and I felt like I was one half my mother and one half lost, a half that I feel so torn from, so incomplete without. But looking at this picture now, the three of us together in 1986, me in overalls, my father in a polo, my mother in a denim jacket, we look like we belong together. I don't look like I'm half of one thing and half of another, but rather one whole thing. Theirs. Loved. I miss my dad. I miss him all the time. But it's moments like this when I'm on the precipice of finally doing work that might just expand my heart, that I wish I could at least send him a letter telling him what I'm doing. And I wish he could send me one back. I already know what he would write. Something like, "I'm proud of you, I love you." But still, I'd like to get one anyway. "All right," I say. My spot at Evelyn's desk has become my second home. I've come to rely on Grace's morning coffee. It has replaced my usual Starbucks habit. "Let's pick up where we left off yesterday. You're about to start Little Women. Go." Evelyn laughs.
"You've become an old hand at this," she says.
"I learn quickly."
A week into rehearsals, Don and I were lying in bed. He was asking how it was going, and I admitted that Celia was just as good as I'd thought she'd be. "Well, the people of Montgomery County is going to be number one again this week. I'm at the top of my game again, and my contract is up at the end of this year. Ari Sullivan is willing to do whatever I want to make me happy. So just say the word, baby, and poof, she's out of there." "No," I said to him, putting my hand on his chest and my head on his shoulder. "It's okay. I'm the lead. She's supporting. I'm not going to worry too much. And anyway, there's something I like about her." "There's something I like about you," he said, pulling me on top of him, and for a moment, all my worries completely disappeared. The next day when we broke for lunch, Joy and Ruby went off to get turkey salads. Celia caught my eye. "There's no chance you'd want to cut out and grab a milkshake, is there?" she asked. The nutritionist at Sunset would not have liked me getting a milkshake, but what he didn't know wouldn't kill him. 10 minutes later, we were in Celia's baby pink 1956 Chevy, making our way to Hollywood Boulevard. Celia was a terrible driver. I gripped the door handle as if it was capable of saving my life. Celia stopped at the light at Sunset Boulevard and Cahuenga. "I'm thinking Schwab's," she said with a grin. Schwab's was the place everybody hung around during the day back then, and everybody knew that Sidney Skolsky from Photoplay worked out of Schwab's almost every day. Celia wanted to be seen there. She wanted to be seen there with me. "What kind of game are you playing?" I asked. "I'm not playing any game," she said, falsely insulted that I'd suggest such a thing. "Oh, Celia," I said, dismissing her with a wave of my hand. "I've been at this a few more years than you. You're the one who just fell off the turnip truck. Don't confuse us." The light turned green and Celia gunned it. "I'm from Georgia," she said, "just outside of Savannah." "So?" "I'm just saying I didn't fall off a turnip truck. I was scouted by a guy from Paramount back home." I found it somewhat intimidating, maybe even threatening, that someone had flown out to woo her. I had made my way to town through my own blood, sweat, and tears, and Celia had Hollywood running to her before she was even somebody. "That may be so," I said, "but I still know what game you're running, honey. Nobody goes to Schwab's for the milkshakes." "Listen," she said, the tone of her voice changing slightly, becoming more sincere. "I could use a story or two. If I'm going to star in my own movie soon, I need some name recognition. And this milkshake business is all just a ruse to be seen with me." I found it insulting, both being used and being underestimated. Celia shook her head. "No, not at all. I wanted to go get a milkshake with you, and then when we pulled out of the lot, I thought, we should go to Schwab's." Celia stopped abruptly at the light at Sunset and Highland. I realized at that point that was just how she drove, a lead foot on both the gas and the brake. "Take a right," I said. "What?" "Take a right." "Why?" "Celia, take the goddamn right before I open this car door and throw myself out of it." She looked at me like I was nuts, which was fair. I had just threatened to kill myself if she didn't put on her blinker. She turned right on Highland. "Take a left at the light," I said. She didn't ask questions, she just put on her blinker, and then she spun onto Hollywood Boulevard. I instructed her to park the car on a side road. We walked to C.C. Brown's. "They have better ice cream," I said, as we walked in. I was putting her in her place. I wasn't going to be photographed with her, unless I wanted to be, unless it was my idea. I certainly wasn't going to be pushed around by somebody less famous than I was. Celia nodded, feeling the sting. The two of us sat down, and the guy behind the counter came up to us, momentarily speechless. He said, "Do you want menus?" I shook my head. "I know what I want, Celia." She looked at him. "Chocolate malt, please." I watched the way his eyes fixed on her, the way she bent forward slightly with her arms together, emphasizing her chest. She seemed unaware of what she was doing, and that mesmerized him even more. "And I'll have a strawberry milkshake," I said. When he looked at me, I saw his eyes open wider, as if he wanted to see as much of me as he could at one time. "Are you Evelyn Hugo?" "No," I said, and then I smiled and looked him right in the eye. It was ironic and teasing, with the same tone and inflection I'd used countless times when I was recognized around town. He scattered away. "Cheer up, Buttercup," I said as I looked at Celia. She was staring down at the glossy counter. "You're getting a better milkshake out of the deal." "I upset you," she said, "with the Schwab's thing. I'm sorry." "Celia, if you're going to be as big as you clearly want to be, you need to learn two things."
"And what are they?"
"First, you have to push people's boundaries and not feel bad about it. No one is going to give you anything if you don't ask for it. You tried. You were told no. Get over it."
And the second thing?
When you use people, be good at it. I wasn't trying to use you.
Yes, Celia, you were, and I'm fine with that. I wouldn't have a moment's hesitation in using you, and I wouldn't expect you to have a second thought about using me. Do you know the difference between the two of us?
There are a lot of differences between the two of us.
Do you know the one in particular I'm talking about? I said.
What is it?
That I know I use people. I'm fine with the idea of using people, and all of that energy that you spend trying to convince yourself that you're not using people, I spend getting better at it.
And you're proud of that?
I'm proud of where it's gotten me.
Are you using me now?
If I was, you'd never know.
That's why I'm asking.
The guy behind the counter came back with our milkshakes. He appeared to have to give himself a pep talk just to give them to us.
No, I said to Celia once he was gone.
No what?
No, I'm not using you.
Well, that's a relief, Celia said. It struck me as painfully naive the way she so easily, so readily believed me. I was telling the truth, but still.
Do you know why I'm not using you? I said.
This should be good, Celia said as she took a sip of her shake. I laughed, surprised by both the world-weariness in her voice and the speed with which she spoke. Celia would go on to win more Oscars than anybody else in our circle back then, and it was always for intense, dramatic roles. But I always thought she'd be dynamite in a comedy. She was so quick.
The reason I'm not using you is that you have nothing to offer me. Not yet, at least.
Celia took a sip of her shake again, stung, and then I leaned forward and took a sip of mine.
I don't think that's true, Celia said.
I'll give you that you're more famous than me. Being married to Captain Hollywood can have that effect on a person. But other than that, we're at the same place, Evelyn. You've turned in a couple of good performances, so have I, and now we're in a movie together, which both of us took on because we want an Academy Award. And let's be honest, I have a leg up on you in that regard.
And why is that?
Because I'm a better actress. I stopped sipping the thick shake through the straw and turned myself toward her.
How do you figure that?
Celia shrugged. It's not something we can measure, I suppose, but it's true. I've seen One More Day. You're really good. But I'm better. And you know I'm better. That's why you and Don almost had me kicked off the project.
No, we didn't.
Yes, you did. Ruby told me.
I wasn't mad at Ruby for telling Celia what I'd told her. The same way you're not mad at a dog for barking at a mailman. That's just what they do.
Oh, fine. So you're a better actress than me. And sure, maybe Don and I discussed getting you fired. So what? Big deal.
Well, that's just my point exactly. I'm more talented than you, and you're more powerful than me.
So?
So you're right. I'm not very good at using people, so I'm trying this a different way. Let's help each other out.
I sipped my milkshake again, mildly intrigued.
How so? I said.
After hours, I'll help you with your scenes. I'll teach you what I know.
And I go with you to Schwab's.
You help me do what you've done, become a star.
But then what, I said, we both end up famous and talented, competing for every job in town?
I suppose that is one option.
And the other?
I really like you, Evelyn.
I looked at her sideways. She laughed at me. I know that's probably not something most actresses mean in this town, but I don't want to be like most actresses. I really like you. I like watching you on screen. I like how the moment you show up in a scene, I can't look at anything else. I like the way your skin is too dark for your blonde hair, the way the two shouldn't go together and yet seem so natural on you. And to be honest, I like how calculating and awful you kind of are.
I am not awful. Celia laughed. Oh, you definitely are.
Getting me fired because you think I'll show you up? Awful. That's just awful, Evelyn. And walking around bragging about how you use people, just terrible. But I really like it when you talk about it. I like how honest you are, how unashamed. So many women around here are full of crap with everything they say and do. I like that you're full of crap only when it gets you something. This laundry list of compliments seems to have a lot of insults in it, I said. Celia nodded, hearing me. You know what you want, and you go after it. I don't think there is anyone in this town doubting that Evelyn Hugo is going to be the biggest star in Hollywood one of these days. And that's not just because you're something to look at. It's because you decided you wanted to be huge, and now you're going to be. I want to be friends with a woman like that. That's what I'm saying. Real friends. None of this Ruby Riley backstabbing, talking about each other behind our backs crap. Friendship. Where each of us gets better, lives better, because we know the other. I considered her. Do we have to do each other's hair and stuff like that? Sunset pays people to do that, so no. Do I have to listen to your man troubles? Certainly not. So what then? We choose to spend time together and try to be there for each other? Evelyn, have you never had a friend before? Of course I've had friends before. A real one, a close friend, a true friend. I have a true friend, thank you very much. Who is it? Harry Cameron. Harry Cameron is your friend? He's my best friend. Well, fine, Celia said, putting out her hand for me to shake. I will be your second best friend, next to Harry Cameron. I took her hand and shook it firmly. Fine. Tomorrow I'll take you to Schwab's, and afterward we can rehearse together. Thank you, she said, and she smiled brightly, as if she'd gotten everything she'd ever wanted in the world. She hugged me, and when we broke away, the man behind the counter was staring at us. I asked for the check. It's on the house, he said, which I thought was the dumbest thing. Because if there is anyone that should be getting free food, it isn't rich people. Will you tell your husband I loved the gun at Point Doom? The man said as Celia and I got up to leave. What husband? I said as coyly as possible. Celia laughed, and I flashed her a grin. But what I was really thinking was, I can't tell him that. He'll think I'm making fun of him, and he'll smack me.
Sub Rosa, June 22nd, 1959. Cold, cold Evelyn. Why would a beautiful couple with a gorgeous five-bedroom home not be interested in filling it up with a brood of children? You'd have to ask Don Adler and Evelyn Hugo that question. Or maybe you'd just have to ask Evelyn. Don wants a baby, and certainly we've all been waiting with bated breath to find out when the progeny of those two beautiful creatures will make his or her way into the world. We know any child they have would be sure to send us into fits of swooning. But Evelyn's saying no. Instead, all Evelyn talks about is her career, including her new movie, Little Women. More than that, Evelyn doesn't even attempt to keep a clean house or mind her husband's simple requests, and she can't be bothered to be kind to the help. Instead, she's out at Schwab's with single girls like Celia St. James. Poor Dawn's at home, yearning for a child, while Evelyn's out having the time of her life. It's all Evelyn, Evelyn, Evelyn in that house, and she's left a very unsatisfied husband.
Is this really happening? I said as I threw the magazine onto Harry's desk, but of course he'd already seen it. It's not that bad. It's not good. No, it's not. Why didn't anyone take care of this? I asked. Because Sub Rosa isn't listening to us anymore. What do you mean? They don't care about the truth or access to stars. They're just printing whatever they want. They care about money, don't they? Yes, but they will make way more by pontificating about the ins and outs of your marriage than we can afford to pay them. You are Sunset Studios. And, if you haven't noticed, we aren't making nearly as much money as we used to. My shoulders slumped. I sat in one of the chairs facing Harry's desk. There was a knock. "It's Celia," she said through the door. I walked over and opened it for her. "I take it you've seen the piece," I said. Celia looked at me. "It's not that bad." "It's not good," I said. "No, it's not." "Thank you. You both are a pair of aces." Celia and I had finished shooting Little Women the week before. The two of us, along with Harry and Gwendolyn, had gone out for celebratory steaks and cocktails at Musso and Frank the day after we finished. Harry had given Celia and me the good news that Ari thought we were both shoo-ins for nominations. Every night after shooting, Celia and I would stay late in my trailer and rehearse our scenes. Celia was method. She tried to become her character. That wasn't really my speed, but she did teach me how to find moments of emotional truth in false circumstances. It was a strange time in Hollywood. There seemed to be two tracks running parallel to each other at the same time back then. There was the studio game, with studio actors and studio dynasties, and then there was the new Hollywood, making its way into the hearts of audiences. Method actors in gritty movies with anti-heroes and untidy endings. It wasn't until those evenings with Celia, the two of us sharing a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of wine for dinner, that I even started paying attention to the new stuff. But whatever influence she had on me was a good one, because Ari Sullivan thought I could win an Oscar. And that made me like Celia all the more. Our weekly outings to hot spots like Rodeo Drive weren't even feeling like a favor anymore. I did it happily, attracting attention for her simply because I enjoyed her company. So as I sat there in Harry's office, pretending to be pissed at both of them for not being very helpful, I knew I was with my two favorite people. "What does Don say about it?" Celia asked. "I'm sure he's going all around the lot trying to find me." Harry looked at me pointedly. He knew what might happen if Don read it in a bad mood. "Celia, are you shooting today?" he asked. She shook her head. "The Pride of Belgium doesn't start until next week. I just have some wardrobe fittings later, after lunch." "I'll move your wardrobe fittings. Why don't you and Evelyn go out shopping? We can call over to Photoplay, let them know you'll be on Robertson." "And be seen out around town with single gal Celia St. James," I said. "That sounds like the perfect example of what I shouldn't do." My mind kept racing through the contents of that stupid article. She can't be bothered to be kind to the help. "That little rat," I said, when I figured it out. I hit my fist on the arm of the chair. "What are you talking about?" Harry said. "My damn maid." "You think your maid talked to Sub Rosa?" "I'm positive my maid talked to Sub Rosa." "All right, well, she's fired," Harry says. "I can have Betsy go over there today and let her go. She'll be gone by the time you get home." I thought about my options. The last thing I needed was America not wanting to see my movies because I wouldn't give Don a baby. I knew, of course, that most moviegoers would never say as much. They might not even realize they thought as much, but they would read something like this, and the next time one of my pictures came out, they'd think to themselves that there was something about me they never liked. They just couldn't put their finger on it. People don't find it very sympathetic or endearing, a woman who puts herself first. Nor do people respect a man who can't keep his wife in line. So it didn't look good for Don, either. "I need to talk to Don," I said, standing up. "Harry, can you have Dr. Lopani ring my house this evening? Sometime around 6? "Why?" "I need him to call me, and when Paula answers, he needs to sound serious, like he has very important news to tell me. He has to sound concerned enough for her to be intrigued." "Okay." "Evelyn, what are you up to?" Celia said, looking up at me.
When I get on the phone, he has to say exactly this, I said, and I took a piece of paper and started scribbling. Harry read it and then handed the paper to Celia. She looked at me. There was a knock on the door, and without even being welcomed, Don came in. "I've been looking all over for you," he said. His voice showed neither anger nor affection. But I knew Don, and I knew that with him there was no lukewarm. The absence of warmth was a chill. "I assume you've read this bullshit?" He had the magazine in his hand. "I have a plan," I said. "You're goddamn right you have a plan. Somebody better have a plan. I'm not walking around this town looking like a henpecked asshole. Cameron, what happened here?"
"I'm dealing with it, Don."
"Good. But in the meantime, I think you should hear Evelyn's plan. I think it's important you're on board before she moves forward."
Don took a seat in the chair opposite Celia. He nodded at her. "Celia?"
"Don?"
"With all due respect, I feel like this is a matter for the three of us to discuss," he said.
"Of course," Celia said, stepping up from the chair.
"No," I said, putting my hand out to stop her. "Stay."
Don looked at me. "She's my friend."
Don rolled his eyes and shrugged.
"So what's the plan, Evelyn?"
"I'm going to fake a miscarriage."
"What on earth for?"
"They'll hate me and probably lose respect for you if they think I won't give you a baby," I said, despite the fact that it was exactly what was going on between us. That was the elephant in the room, of course. That was all sort of true.
"But they'll pity you both if they think she can't," Celia said.
"Pity? What are you talking about, pity? I don't want to be pitied. There's no power in pity. You can't sell movies with pity."
And then Harry spoke up and said, "Like hell you can't." When the phone rang at 6:10, Paula answered and then rushed into the bedroom to tell me the doctor was calling. I picked up the line with Don beside me. Dr. Lopani read the script written for him. I started crying as loudly as I could on the off chance that Paula had decided to mind her own business for once. A half hour later, Don went downstairs and told Paula we had to let her go. He wasn't nice about it. In fact, he was just mean enough to piss her off. "Because you might run to the tabloids to tell them about the miscarriage of your employers. But you'll definitely run to the tabloids and tell them about the miscarriage of the people who just fired you."
Sub Rosa, June 29th, 1959. Bless Dawn and Evelyn. They need it. The couple who has everything but can't have what they truly want. In the home of Dawn Adler and Evelyn Hugo, things are not what they seem. It may appear that Evelyn is putting off Dawn's advances when it comes to baby-making, but the truth turns out to be quite a different tale. Because all this time we thought Evelyn was pushing Dawn away, it turns out she was working overtime. Evelyn and Dawn desperately want a little Dawn and Evelyn running around the house, but nature has not been kind. It seems every time they find themselves in the family way, things take a sad turn, a tragedy that has befallen them this month for the third time. Let's send Dawn and Evelyn our best wishes. It just goes to show that money can't buy happiness, folks.
The night after the new article came out, Don was not convinced that it had been the right move, and Harry was busy but wouldn't say with what, which I knew meant he was seeing someone. And I wanted to celebrate. So Celia came over to the house and we split a bottle of wine.
"You've got no maid," Celia said as she was searching around the kitchen for a corkscrew.
"No," I said, sighing. "Not until the studio is done vetting all the applicants." Celia found the corkscrew and I handed her a bottle of Cabernet. I never spent much time in the kitchen, and it was sort of surreal to be there without someone looking over my shoulder, offering to make me a sandwich or find whatever I was looking for. When you are rich, parts of your house don't really feel like they are yours. The kitchen was one of them for me. I looked through my own cabinets, trying to remember where the wine glasses were. Ah, I said when I found them, here. Celia looked at what I was handing her. Those are champagne flutes. Oh, right, I said, putting them back where I'd found them. We had two other sizes. I showed one of each to Celia. Which? The rounder. Do you not know glassware? Glassware, servingware, I don't know any of it. Remember, honey, I'm new money. Celia laughed as she poured our drinks. I've either not been able to afford it or have been so rich someone would do it for me. Never anywhere in between. I love that about you, Celia said as she took a full glass and handed it to me. She took the other for herself. I've had money my whole life. My parents act as if there is a recognized nobility in Georgia. And all of my brothers and sisters, with the exception of my older brother Robert, are just like my parents. My sister Rebecca thinks my being in movies is an embarrassment to the family. Not so much because of the Hollywood aspect, but because I'm working. She says it's undignified. I love them and I hate them, but that's family, I guess. I don't know, I said. I don't have much family. Any, really. My father and the rest of the relatives I had back in Hell's Kitchen had not succeeded in contacting me, if they had even tried at all. And I hadn't lost one night of sleep thinking about them. Celia looked at me. She appeared to neither pity me nor feel uncomfortable for all that she'd had growing up that I didn't have. All the more reason for me to admire you the way I do, she said. Everything you have, you went out and got for yourself. Celia leaned her glass into mine and clinked. To you, she said, for being absolutely unstoppable. I laughed and then drank with her. Come, I said, leading her out of the kitchen and into the living room. I put my drink down on the hairpin leg coffee table and walked over to the record player. I pulled out Billie Holiday's Lady in Satin from the bottom of the stack. Don hated Billie Holiday, but Don wasn't there. Do you know her real name is Eleonora Fagan? I said to Celia. Billie Holiday is just so much prettier. I sat down on one of our blue tufted sofas. Celia sat on the one opposite me. She folded her legs underneath her, her spare hand on her feet. What's yours? She asked. Is it really Evelyn Hugo? I grabbed my wine glass and confessed the truth. Herrera. Evelyn Herrera. Celia didn't react, really. She didn't say, so you are Latin, or I knew you were faking it, as I feared she might be thinking. She didn't say that it explained why my skin was darker than hers or Don's. In fact, she said nothing at all until she said, that's beautiful. And yours? I asked. I stood up and moved over to the couch where she was sitting to close the gap between us. Celia St. James. Jameson. What? Cecilia Jameson. That's my real name. That's a great name. Why did they change it? I changed it. Why? Because it sounds like a girl who might live next door to you. And I've always wanted to be the kind of girl you feel lucky just to lay your eyes on. She tilted her head back and finished her wine. Like you. Oh, stop. You stop. You know damn well what you are, how you affect the people around you. I'd kill for a chest like that and full lips like yours. You make people think of undressing you just by showing up in a room fully clothed. I felt flushed hearing her talk about me like that, having her talk about the way men saw me. I'd never heard a woman talk about me that way before. Celia took my glass out of my hand. She threw the wine back into her own throat. We need more, she said, waving the glass in the air. I smiled and took both glasses into the kitchen. Celia followed me. She leaned against my formica counter as I poured. The first time I saw father and daughter, do you know what I thought? She said. Billie Holiday was now faintly playing in the background. What? I said, handing her her glass. She took it and put it down for a moment, then hopped up onto the counter and picked it up. She was wearing dark blue capri pants and a white sleeveless turtleneck. I thought you were the most gorgeous woman who had ever been created, and we should all stop trying. She inhaled half the contents of her glass. No, you did not, I said. Yes, I did. I took a sip of my wine. It makes no sense, I told her. You admiring me like you're any different. You're a knockout, plain and simple, with your big blue eyes and your hourglass figure. I think together we really give the guys a wild sight. Celia smiled. Thank you. I finished my glass and put it down on the counter. Celia took it as a challenge to do the same with hers. She wiped her mouth with her fingertips when she was done. I poured us more. How did you learn all the underhanded, sneaky stuff you know? Celia asked. I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, I said coyly. You're smarter than you let on to just about anybody. Me? I said. Celia was starting to get goosebumps, so I suggested we go back into the living room where it was warmer. The desert winds had swooped in and turned this June night into a chilly one. When I started to get cold, too, I asked her if she knew how to make a fire. I've seen people do it, she said, shrugging. Me, too, I've seen Don do it, but I've never done it. We can do it, she said. We can do anything. All right, I said. You go open another bottle of wine, and I'll start trying to guess how to get it started. Great idea. Celia flung the blanket off her shoulders and ran into the kitchen. I knelt down in front of the fireplace and started poking the ashes, and then I took two logs and laid them perpendicular to each other. We need newspaper, she said when she came back, and I've decided there's no point in glasses anymore. I looked up to see her swigging the wine out of the bottle. I laughed, grabbed the newspaper off the table, and threw it in. Even better, I said, and I ran upstairs and grabbed the copy of Sub Rosa that had called me a cold bitch. I raced back down to show her. We'll burn this. I threw the magazine into the fireplace and lit a match. Do it, she said. Burn those jerks. The flame curled the pages, held steady for a moment, and then sputtered out. I lit another match and threw it in. I somehow managed a few embers and then a very small flame as some of the newspaper caught. All right, I said. I feel confident that this is slowly coming along. Celia came over and handed me the bottle of wine. I took it and sipped from it. You have a little catching up to do, she said, as I tried to give it back to her. I laughed and put the bottle back up to my lips. It was expensive wine. I liked drinking it as if it was water, as if it meant nothing to me. Poor girls from Hell's Kitchen can't drink this kind of wine and treat it like it's nothing. All right, give it back, Celia said. I teasingly held on to it, not letting it out of my grasp. Her hand was on mine. She pulled with the same force I did, and then I said, okay, it's all yours. But I said it too late, and I let go too soon. Wine went all over her white shirt. Oh, God, I said, I'm sorry. I took the bottle, put it down on the table, took her hand, and pulled her up the stairs. You can borrow a shirt. I have just the perfect one for you. I led her into my bedroom and straight into my closet. I watched as Celia looked around, taking in the surroundings of the bedroom I shared with Don. Can I ask you something? She said. Her voice had an airiness to it, a wistfulness. I thought she might ask me if I believed in ghosts or love at first sight. Sure, I said. And you'll promise to tell the truth? She asked as she took a seat on the corner of the bed. Not particularly, I said. Celia laughed.
But go ahead and ask the question, I said, and we'll see. Do you love him? She asked. Don? Who else? I thought about it. I had loved him once. I'd loved him very much. But did I love him any more? I don't know, I said. Is it all for publicity? Are you just in it to be an Adler? No, I said, I don't think so. What then? I walked over and sat down on the bed. It's hard to say I do or don't love him, or to say that I'm with him for one reason over another. I love him, and a lot of the time I hate him. And I'm with him because of his name, but also because we have fun. We used to have fun a lot, and now we still do sometimes. It's hard to explain. Does he do it for you? She said. Yes, very much. Sometimes I find myself aching to be with him so much it embarrasses me. I don't know if a woman is supposed to want a man as much as I find myself wanting Don. Don may have taught me that I was capable of loving someone and desiring him. But he also taught me that you could desire someone even when you don't like him, that you can desire someone especially when you don't like him. I believe today they call it hate-fucking, but it's a crude name for something that is a very human, sensual experience. Forget I asked, Celia said, standing up from the bed. I could tell she was bothered. Let me get the shirt, I said, walking toward the dresser. It was one of my favorite shirts, a lilac button-down blouse with a silvery sheen to it. But it didn't fit me well. I could barely fasten it around my chest. Celia was smaller than me, more delicate. Here, I said, handing it to her. She took it from me and looked at it. The color is gorgeous. I know, I said. I stole it from the set of father and daughter, but don't tell anyone. I hope you know by now that all of your secrets are safe with me, Celia said as she started unbuttoning to put it on. I think for her it was a throwaway line, but it meant a lot to me. Not because she said it, I suppose, but because when she said it, I realized I believed her. I do, I said. I do know that. People think that intimacy is about sex, but intimacy is about truth. When you realize you can tell someone your truth, when you can show yourself to them, when you can stand in front of them bare, and their response is, you're safe with me. That's intimacy. And by those standards, that moment with Celia was the most intimate one I'd ever had with anyone. It made me so appreciative, so grateful, that I wanted to wrap my arms around her and never let go. I'm not sure it will fit me, Celia said. Try it on. I bet it will, and if it does, it's yours. I wanted to give her a lot of things. I wanted what I had to be hers. I wondered if this was what it felt like to love someone. I already knew what it meant to be in love with someone. I'd felt it, and I'd acted it. But to love someone, to care for them, to throw your lot in with theirs and think, whatever happens, it's you and me. All right, Celia said. She threw the shirt on the bed. As she pulled off her own shirt, I found myself looking at the paleness of the skin stretched across her ribs. I gazed at the bright whiteness of her bra. I noticed the way her breasts, instead of being lifted by the bra like mine, appeared as if the bra were there merely for decoration. I followed the tiny trail of dark brown freckles that ran along the side of her right hip. Well, hello, Don said. I jumped. Celia gasped and scrambled to put her shirt back on. Don started laughing. What on earth is going on in here? He teased. I walked over to him and said, absolutely nothing.
Photo moment, November 2nd, 1959. Life of the Party Girl. Celia St. James is really making a name for herself around town, and it's not just because she's proving to be a swell actress. The Georgia Peach knows how to make all the right friends, the most high profile of which is everyone's favorite starlet, Evelyn Hugo. Celia and Evelyn have been seen all over town, shopping, chatting, and even finding time for a round or two of ladies' golf at the Beverly Hills Golf Club. And to make matters even more perfect, it seems the best friends will be going on plenty of double dates in the near future. Celia has been spotted at the Trocadero with none other than Robert Logan, close friend of Evelyn's hubby, Don Adler. A handsome date, glamorous friends, and talk of a statuette in her future. It's a good time to be Celia St. James.
I don't want to do this, Celia said. She was wearing a tailored black dress with a deep V neckline. It was the kind of dress I could never wear out of the house or I'd be picked up on a prostitution charge. She had on a diamond necklace that Don had persuaded Sunset to loan to her. Sunset wasn't in the business of helping freelance actresses, but Celia wanted the diamonds, and I wanted Celia to have anything she wanted. And Don wanted me to have anything I wanted, at least most of the time. Don had just starred in his second Western, The Righteous, after he had lobbied Ari Sullivan hard for one more crack at that. This time, however, the reviews were telling a different story. Don had manned up. He was convincing everyone on his sophomore try that he was a formidable action star. Which translated into Don having the number one movie in the country, and Ari Sullivan giving Don anything he asked for. That's how those diamonds made their way onto Celia's neck, the large center ruby resting at the top of her breasts. I was in emerald green again. It was a look that was starting to become my signature. This time it was off the shoulder and made of a peau de soie, with a cinched waist, full skirt, and beading on the neckline. My hair was down in a brushed-under bob. I looked over at Celia, who was looking in the mirror at my vanity, fiddling with her bouffant. "You have to do this," I said. "I don't want to. Doesn't that count for anything?" I picked up my clutch, made to match my dress. "Not really," I said. "You're not the boss of me, you know," she said. "Why are we friends?" I asked her. "Honestly, I don't even remember," she said. "Because our whole is greater than the sum of our parts." "And so what?" "And so, when it comes to what acting roles to take and how to play them, who's in charge?" "I am." "And now, when it's the opening of our movie, who's in charge then?" "I suppose you are." "You suppose, right." "I really hate him, Evelyn," Celia said. She was messing with her makeup. "Put the rouge down," I said. "Gwen made you look gorgeous. Don't mess with perfect."
"Did you listen to me?
I said I hate him."
"Of course you hate him. He's a weasel."
"There's no one else?"
"Not at this hour."
"And I can't go alone?"
"To your own premiere?
Why can't you and I just go together?"
"I'm going with Don. You're going with Robert."
Celia frowned and turned back to the mirror. I saw her eyes narrow and her lips purse, as if she was thinking of how mad she was. I grabbed her bag and handed it to her. It was time to go.
"Celia, would you cut it out? If you're not willing to do what it takes to get your name in the paper, then why the hell are you here?"
She stood up, ripped the bag out of my hand, and walked out the door. I watched her go down my stairs into my living room with a grand smile and then run into Robert's arms as if she thought he was the savior of all mankind. I walked up to Don. He always cleaned up nicely in his tux. There was no denying that he was going to be the most handsome man there. But I was tiring of him. What's that saying, behind every gorgeous woman there's a man sick of screwing her? Well, it works both ways. No one mentions that part.
"Shall we go?" Celia said, as if she couldn't possibly wait to show up to the movie on Robert's arm. She was a great actress. No one has ever denied that. I don't want to waste a minute more, I said, looping my arm into Don's and holding on for dear life. He looked down at my arm and then at me as if pleasantly surprised by my warmth.
Let's see our Little Women in Little Women, shall we? Don said.
I nearly smacked him across the face. He was owed a smack or two, or 15. Our cars picked us up and drove us to Grauman's Chinese Theater. Parts of Hollywood Boulevard had been blocked off for our arrival. The driver pulled up just behind Celia and Robert outside the theater. We were the last in a line of four cars. When you are one of an ensemble of female stars in a movie, and the studio wants to make a big show, they make sure you all show up at the same time in four separate cars with four eligible bachelors for dates. Except in my case, the eligible bachelor was my husband. Our dates stepped out first, each standing by and offering a hand. I waited as I watched Ruby step out, then Joy, then Celia. I waited just a beat longer than the rest of them, and then I stepped out, leg first, onto the red carpet. "You're the most beautiful woman here," Don said into my ear as I stood next to him. But I already knew he thought I was the most gorgeous woman there. I knew very acutely that if he did not believe that, he would not have been with me. Men were almost never with me for my personality. I'm not suggesting that charming girls should take pity on the pretty ones. I'm just saying it's not so great being loved for something you didn't do. The photographers started calling our names as we all walked in. My head was a jumble of words being thrown in my direction. Ruby, Joy, Celia, Evelyn, Mr. and Mrs. Adler, over here! I could barely hear myself think over the din of cameras snapping and the crowd buzzing. But as I had long ago trained myself to do, I pretended as if I felt perfectly calm inside, as if being treated like a tiger at the zoo was my most comfortable situation. Don and I held hands and smiled for every flashing bulb. At the end of the red carpet stood a few men with microphones. Ruby was speaking to one, Joy and Celia were speaking to another. The third put his mic in my face. He was a short guy, with small eyes and a bulbous, gin-blossomed nose. A face made for radio, as they say. "Miss Hugo, are you excited for this picture to come out?" I laughed as kindly as I could to disguise what a stupid question he was asking. "I've waited my whole life to play Joe March. I'm incredibly excited for tonight." "And you seem to have made a good friend during filming," he said. "What's that?" "You and Celia St. James, you seem like you're great friends." "She's wonderful, and wonderful in the film, absolutely. She and Robert Logan seem to be getting hot and heavy." "Oh, you'd have to ask them about that, I don't know." "But didn't you set them up?" Don stepped in. "I think that's all for questions," he said. "Don, when are you and the missus going to start a family?" "I said it was enough, friend, and it's enough, thank you." Don pushed me forward. We got to the doors, and I watched as Ruby and her date, followed by Joy and hers, walked through. Don opened the door in front of us, waiting for me. Robert held the one on the other side for Celia, and I got an idea. I took Celia's hand and turned us around. "Wave to the crowd," I said, smiling. "Like we're the goddamn queens of England." Celia smiled brightly and did exactly as I did. We stood there in black and green, redhead and blonde, one of us all ass and the other all tits, waving to the crowd as if we ruled them. Ruby and Joy were nowhere to be seen, and the crowd roared for us. We turned around and headed into the theater. We made our way to our seats. "Big moment," Don said. "I know. In just a few months, you'll win for this, and I'll win for the righteous. And then the sky's the limit.
Celia is going to be nominated, too, I whispered into his ear.
People are going to leave this movie talking about you, he said. I have no doubt.
I looked over to see Robert whispering into Celia's ear. She was laughing as if he actually had anything funny to say. But it was me who got her those diamonds, me who got her that gorgeous picture of the two of us that would make headlines the next day. Meanwhile, she was acting as if he was about to charm her dress off. All I could think was that he didn't know about that line of freckles on her hip. I knew about them, and he didn't.
She's really talented, Don. Oh, get over her, Don said. I'm sick of hearing her name all the damn time. They shouldn't be asking you about her. They should be asking you about us.
Don, he waved me off, determining before I'd even said anything that whatever I had to say was useless to him. The lights dimmed, the crowd quieted, the credits started to roll, and my face appeared on the screen. The entire audience stared at me on screen as I said, "Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents." But by the time Celia said, "We've got father and mother and each other," I knew it was all over for me. Everyone was going to walk out of this theater talking about Celia St. James. It should have made me afraid or jealous or insecure. I should have been plotting to one-up her in some way by planting a story that she was a prude or sleeping around. That is the fastest way to ruin a woman's reputation, after all, to imply that she has not adequately threaded the needle that is being sexually satisfying without ever appearing to desire sexual satisfaction. But instead of spending the next hour and 45 minutes nursing my wounds, I spent the time holding back a smile. Celia was going to win an Oscar. It was as plain as the nose on her face, and it didn't make me jealous. It made me happy. When Beth died, I cried, and then I reached over Robert's and Don's laps and squeezed her hand. Don rolled his eyes at me, and I thought, he's going to find an excuse to hit me later. But it will be for this. I was standing in the middle of Ari Sullivan's mansion at the top of Benedict Canyon. Don and I had made it up the winding streets without saying much of anything to each other. I suspected he knew the same thing I did once he saw Celia in that movie, that no one cared about anything else. After our driver dropped us off and we made our way inside, Don said, "I need to find the John," and disappeared. I looked for Celia, but couldn't find her. Instead, I was surrounded by brown-nosing losers, hoping to rub elbows with me while they drank their sugary cocktails and talked about Eisenhower. "Will you excuse me?" I said to a woman in a hideous bubble cut. She was waxing on about the Hope Diamond. Women who collected rare jewels seemed exactly the same as men who were desperate to have just one night with me. The world was about objects to them. All they wanted to do was possess. "Oh, there you are, Ev," Ruby said when she found me in the hallway. She had two green cocktails in her hand. Her voice was lukewarm, a bit hard to read. "Having a good night?" I asked. She looked over her shoulder, put the stems of both glasses in one hand, and then pulled me by the elbow, spilling as she did. "Ow, Ruby," I said, noticeably perturbed. She nodded covertly to the laundry room to the right of us. "What on earth?" I said. "Would you just open the goddamn door, Evelyn?" I turned the handle, and Ruby stepped in and dragged me with her. She shut the door behind us. "Here," she said, handing me one of the cocktails in the dark. "I was getting it for Joy, but you have it. It matches your dress, anyway." As my eyes adjusted, I took the drink from her. "You're lucky it matches my dress. You nearly poured half the drink on it." With one of her hands now free, Ruby tugged on the pull chain of the light above us. The tiny room lit up and stung my eyes.
You have absolutely no decorum tonight, Ruby. You think I'm worried about what you think of me, Evelyn Hugo? Now listen, what are we going to do?
What are we going to do about what?
About what? About Celia saying...